Hello, and welcome to Exiting the Cave, a podcast dedicated to sharing philosophical insights, the practice of epistemic humility, and generally learning how to look directly into the sun. My name is Greg Gauthier, and I'm an amateur philosophy geek. I'll be your host on this journey. I hope you enjoy it. When I began this podcast, I knew that I wanted to start taking on topics of a more controversial nature than I typically deal with in my blog. I also wanted to use it as an opportunity to explore subject areas that I don't typically address in the blog as well. What I didn't expect was that there would be an opportunity to do both so soon after starting the project. What I'm about to read to you is a short essay I posted on the blog dealing with the shooter in New Zealand. I offer in this short essay what seems to me to be a useful insight from the perspective of Christianity. Now, I'm not a Christian myself, but I am quite sympathetic to many of the arguments and the sentiments found in the teachings of Christian doctrine. And this is one that stood out to me as I was considering what took place in New Zealand just a couple of weeks ago. And just to be clear here, I'm no religious scholar. I'm no expert on Christian doctrine. This is just an amateur philosopher trying to incorporate everything he has at his disposal in an attempt to understand the world around him. And I hope that it helps you as well. And with that, I give you the essay. We are what we choose to do. Whether you believe there actually is a God or not, it is still instructive to explore the conception of God provided by the various religions. In particular, the difference in character between the New Testament Christian God and the Old Testament Muslim and Hebrew God. The Old Testament conception of God's omnipotence is one of active and continuous expression. God is all-powerful, and thus the greatest of the great, because he exercises his power everywhere at all times. Were he not to do so, we could not call him great or omnipotent, because there would be gaps in time in which his omnipotence is not fully expressed. The Christian conception of God's omnipotence is starkly different. Unlike the Old Testament God of power and might, the Christian God is great precisely because he can choose to refrain from exercising his power for the sake of something greater. The defining example of this, of course, is Christ's last moment on the cross, in which the Romans are permitted to murder God's Son, and in a brief moment of his human frailty, Christ begs to know why. Thus, the God of Christianity has free will, and Christ answers Socrates' Euthyphro dilemma by suggesting that yes, there is a moral order written into the universe itself that even God himself looks to for guidance. This willingness to refrain from the wanton and capricious exercise of the ultimate power of life and death, even in the most dire of circumstances, is one model of behavior that Brent and Tarrant might have been wise to take to heart from his religion before choosing to act on his own anguish and rage. What is plain to see from Tarrant's manifesto is that while he is a moral monster, he is also a typical human being. The implications of that are terrifying to most people. The fact that we have choices and that those choices have this degree of significance is something most people would rather die than face head on. Notice the reaction he has to the murder of the Swedish girl and to the World War I graveyard in France. This is a normal human emotional response. What follows from it is also something we all face. What to do about those feelings? What choices do you make? What actions follow from those choices? Brent and Tarrant, in my view, made the wrong choice, and it has powerfully devastating consequences. He chose death over life. He chose destruction over construction. He chose the coward's way. Changing the world is amoral. Some have complained that while my point about God and free will is interesting and compelling, that it is a mistake to make it specific to Brent and Tarrant. I have an answer to these folks. Karl Marx is credited as saying, "The philosophers have only interpreted the world in various ways. The point, however, is to change it." I disagree with this contention. The point of philosophy is neither to interpret the world nor to change it. The point of philosophy is to understand the world, our place in it, and, most importantly, to understand the significance for action that that relation has. Though the consequence of achieving understanding is certainly to change the world in some way, it is not the telos of philosophy. When I publicly write down ideas like this one, I very often begin with lofty abstractions, relations of rough concepts, and in this case, even a theological interpretation. If I were to stop there, I would leave you with no real value. I would tell you only how much I've read about certain subjects, which is uninteresting at best and utterly vain at worst. I would have not helped anyone achieve any understanding. To do that, I have to find a way to tie a rope around those floating abstractions and dancing relations and pull them down to earth. I must connect them to the way that we act in the world. It is in linking our moral conception of ourselves to the moral evaluation of our actions that morality has any purchase at all, and philosophy has any chance at all of improving the world through understanding and not merely changing it. Improving the understanding of why we act the way we do, and the understanding of how we make decisions, is perhaps the most important task of philosophy today. Very few philosophers actually do this, precisely because they refuse to make it specific. I will not elaborate here as to the fundamental reasons why philosophers refuse to do this, but I will say that they utterly fail in their mission when they do not. The thought experiment is a common tool of the philosopher. It is often used to enable safe discussions of incredibly uncomfortable questions about the way we act and the kinds of choices we make as human beings. But one need not dwell in the fantasy land of trolleys, lifeboats, and flagpoles when stark reality is crying out for an explanation. Brent and Tarrant is just such a cry. Were I not to make my brief essay specific, were I to avoid including this example of a failure to understand the fundamental nature of his obligation to the world, the whole project would have been nothing but vain self-congratulation. The truth is, we all have the capacity to do what this man did, and every time we look upon an outrage, we face the same choice he did. We need to look long and hard at that moment in Brent and Tarrant, and that capacity in ourselves to understand why he acted as he did, and why we didn't follow suit. Where we are headed. Some will respond to the remarks that I've just made by saying, well, of course we understand why he did what he did. He's just crazy. But it is precisely this willingness to retreat into deterministic causal explanations, this unwillingness to stare our choice in the face, to own the darkness that inhabits our own hearts, that brought us to the precipice of extinction in the 20th century. Nietzsche warned us. Jung warned us. Solzhenitsyn warned us. The passion for imagined future states of universal perfection, the collective rage against perceived injustices, the instinctive drive to justify ourselves corrupted into the lust for blood and vengeance. These things were not mere insanities. They were evils. And we allowed ourselves to be taken by them, and 100 million people perished in unimaginable suffering because of it. We can certainly pretend now that men like Tarrant are just psychological automata, momentary anomalies to be disregarded as inevitable consequences of a deterministic universe, but really significant of nothing. That is one choice we can make. If we do, then we are certainly doomed to repeat the horrors of the past century, only on a scale that I don't think anyone is really prepared for. On the other hand, we can take Tarrant seriously and treat him as the warning that he is, although not quite the one he intended consciously. He stands as the expression, the actualization, the realization of the evil we are all capable of, given the right sort of ideological possession. If we heed that warning, then perhaps the future will be different from the 20th century. Perhaps we'll have learned our lesson finally, and can turn this ship toward more gentle shores. The more I study philosophy, the more I am convinced that a reconciliation of our divided hearts is only possible through, for lack of a better way of putting it, some kind of religious awakening. The model of God humbling himself on the cross is not only a lesson that Brent and Tarrant needed. It was a lesson that we all needed. And still need. I think Nietzsche's spokesman in Zarathustra put it best. God is dead. God remains dead, and we have killed him. How shall we comfort ourselves, the murderers of all murderers? What was holiest and mightiest of all that the world has yet owned has bled to death under our knives. Who will wipe this blood off us? What water is there for us to cleanse ourselves? What festivals of atonement, what sacred games shall we have to invent? Is not the greatest of this deed too great for us? Must we ourselves not become gods, simply to appear worthy of it? Gods indeed.